All right. The hour of 7:30 really having arrived, and the game clock is on. I'm going to call to order Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. Representative Khan, we're going to move you to the head of the agenda because you sat in the chair first. House File 1638, Representative Khan, what motion are you going to make on your bill?
I think this needs to be referred to finance.
To finance. Representative Khan moves that House File 1638 be recommended to pass and be referred to finance. Representative Khan.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and members, I've been through so many committees, I'm not sure if this committee ever heard this issue before. But this is the legislative, this bill essentially incorporates the legislative auditor's report. There was a lot of discussion about lack of oversight of the amount of money that the state gives out to various grants. Specifically when the legislature gives a grant, legislates a grant or something, there's very little oversight of it. And so this bill is, I think everyone is in support of it. We do have Marsha Abner is in the audience from the Center for Nonprofits, and she'd be happy to speak in favor of this. They want some better control. And I'd like to first yield to Commissioner Badgero, who would, because it is part of this, it is a governor's initiative.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dana Badgero, the Commissioner of Administration, and I'm pleased also to present to you our proposal with respect to a central grants management office located in the Department of Administration. This actually came out of a multi-year study conducted under the Drive to Excellence. The committee that was formed under Drive to Excellence consisted of a number of state agency representatives, together with representatives of the counties and cities and the Council of Nonprofits, and they worked for some time to look at some of the systemic issues with respect to grants. We have, for example, 24 cabinet-level agencies giving grants, most of which using different processes. Much like we do in many agencies, each agency invents its own methodology. So that from a grant perspective, from a nonprofit perspective, we look different in every single agency. And this centralized office would set out common processes and practices, including common forms, contract forms, and other grant-related forms, and utilize best practices and recommend and enforce best practices across all agencies. It would define, there are some definitional changes in the statutory language here that would define grants as separate from contracts, because indeed they are separate. They are not simply purchasing goods and services, but they are utilizing the nonprofit community to do government service. So with that, we do have a companion finance piece that will appear in the omnibus bonding bill, which would provide for two people and some clerical support to establish this office.
All right. Commissioner, there was some discussion when the report was done in finance about the creation of a separate office, and it was my understanding that this bill was altered from the original proposal, that it was to be absorbed in your agency, and there wasn't to be a separate office, but you were going to absorb the responsibilities. Commissioner, can you address that?
Mr. Chair and members, I certainly was not part of that discussion nor that hearing. The Drive to Excellence very strongly recommended, as does the legislative auditor, the establishment of a new separate office. And, of course, currently we're neither staffed nor funded to do that.
All right. Now, it's my understanding, not a separate hearing. The concern was raised in finance about the creation of yet another office to handle this. And it was my understanding that the bill was going to move forward with you absorbing the responsibilities and doing it under current complement. That apparently has not happened here. Am I correct? Representative Khan?
Mr. Chairman, obviously that decision will be made further in the Finance Committee as we decide what the appropriation is for the Department of Administration. One of the problems is that we're also, with the breakup of DUR, chunks of DUR are going into the Department of Administration also. And so there is a bit of reorganization.
I understand that. And given that, the discussion again, when the legislative auditor's report was done in finance, that there were concerns raised about creating yet another office at a time when we have been strapped with very limited resources. But I raised the concern because I know I raised it in finance. So I'm just raising it again that it appears we are going to create yet another office. And I just raise it, Representative Kahn, because this also has, or this committee does have reform in its title, and the intent was not to create more, but do more with less.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure where we see, we're giving the responsibility to the Department of Administration, and we're establishing a process, not an office. I'm not quite sure where I see.
All right, well, Representative Kahn, kind of, that's why I'm asking for clarity. The initial presentation appeared to be the creation of a new office. It was my understanding that what the department was going to do was to absorb these responsibilities in the department and not create a new office.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's what the bill says.
All right.
Now,
I'm just asking for quite early, and clarification is good. Any other discussion? Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kahn, or Commissioner, could you just briefly describe the debtor practices ramifications? I see here that that's a pretty major component of this. And actually today at 12:30, we'll be putting together the omnibus bill on debtor practices. So the timing couldn't be better.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Simon, that actually was an addition to this initiative on behalf of our data practices office. As you know, contract proposals are non-public data until the contract is awarded or bids are opened. But no such corollary provision exists for grants. And now that we're separating out grants and making them a unique entity, the belief was that we ought to provide similar protection for grant proposals prior to the award of the grant.
Any other discussion? Anyone else wish to testify for or against? Seeing Ms. Abner, come on up. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir.
Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Marcia Abner. I'm the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we just want to underscore that nonprofits have been involved in the discussion of this process from its very beginning. In fact, we have been working with the departments that do grant making for a number of years, and you have a handout that identifies both our support and our hopes for this. We hope that you will support it. Nonprofits have been in discussions with the commissioner and her staff, and we think that this really will bring coherence, transparency, accountability, and access to the system.
Commissioner, could you just answer one more question? There's an open appropriation on the back. You said you'd need a complement of two to do this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, we believe that's the minimum required. And just parenthetically, the Office of Legislative Auditor similarly suggested that it required some minimal staff.
Can you give us a ballpark on what that would cost?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The governor's budget request does include $250,000 a year, which includes two professional staff people as well as some administrative support and then the associated computers and so forth.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Badgerow or Representative Kahn, it's my understanding, and I could be wrong, that the rough total dollars that are going out through the grant that this process would administer is roughly equivalent to the state total procurement dollars, total state purchasing that we're doing, and yet there's as yet no oversight over roughly, you know, pretty large amount of money that's about equal to procurement, which we do a lot to provide oversight for.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, we grant $1 billion, which is roughly equivalent to what we purchase in goods and services, to over 1,900 nonprofits.
Representative Winkler, this point was brought up in finance, and both Representative Leader and I brought it up, that we were somewhat appalled that there was no oversight at this point, that either the legislative auditor or this department had somehow not seen fit to oversight in this particular series of grants. So there is concern here that there was a lack of oversight, and there's equal concern that now we have to build it in that extra cost. I just raise those concerns. Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I hate to give away secrets of what the State Government Finance Committee might be doing. But one of the things that I've looked at from prior life a long, long time ago, when I worked on things like National Institutes of Health at NSF and American Cancer Society grants, was the concept of an overhead figure that went along with those grants. And so we may be looking into an overhead figure on grants that then goes to support that budget. I'm not promising that we're going to do
well,
that.
Well, Representative Pound, you've been nothing if not transparent.
That's usually not been said about me, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion to the bill? Anyone else wish to testify? No further testimony. Representative Kahn renews her motion. Representative Kahn, you didn't amend this at all, did you? There's no amendment. Representative Kahn renews her motion that House File 1638 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Liebling was here. I saw her somewhere. There she is. This is amendment. This is cool.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Now we know when our name is called, we have to run. Quick. So we won't miss our turn.
Representative Liebling, just hold on just one second. Representative Liebling, I'm going to move that House File 908 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Finance. And I believe you also have an amendment. Is that correct?
I do, Mr. Chair.
And the amendment is the amendment in your packets, A4, members?
Yeah.
I have it in mine.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
All right. I have the A4 amendment. Representative Liebling, I'm going to move the A4 amendment, and I'm going to recommend we put that into the bill because it dramatically changes the bill and eliminates some of the things that we would normally be talking about in this committee, and then the scope of the bill is relatively narrow after this amendment goes on. So I move the A4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Liebling, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I start talking about the bill, I just wanted to ask, is this bill going to Health and Human Services Finance?
Representative Liebling, according to the chart that I have given 100-plus copies out in my office that I like to call Leave No Bill Behind, anything that goes to a division must go to Finance first. And then at Finance, it is re-referred down to a division. As Representative Carlson says, it goes in as it comes out or something like that.
Okay.
It's a
okay.
Rather crude agricultural metaphor, I think. But the process is it has to go to Finance, so you're fine there.
Thank you for clarifying that.
That's okay.
Well,
Assembly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. Well, as the Chair explained, the amendment that we've just put on dramatically changes the scope of the bill and should make the discussion in this committee much simplified, and I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Steve Larson of ARC to explain the bill.
Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Steve Larson, Executive Director with the ARC of Minnesota. And as both the Chair and Representative Liebling have identified, the bill has been scaled back primarily for fiscal reasons. And on line 1.3, we're looking at a new sunset date for the Region 10 Quality Assurance Project to be 2014. That extends it out 5 years. And then the rest of the language here modifies a statewide quality assurance system that we would like to initiate over the next few years, lay the foundation for providing greater oversight to the programs that provide services and supports to persons with developmental disabilities by starting a advisory group, annually surveying recipients, and improving the incident reporting system.
Any other testimony to the bill? Representative Liebling, anyone else you meet?
No, Mr. Chair.
Members, you have any questions? Seeing no further questions or testimony, I'll renew my motion that House File 908, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative, where is she? She just left. I was going to have Representative Wolfiger get her bill out of the way, and now she's gone. She was here. Where's she? Representative Wolfiger, can we get you up now?
Sure.
While you're here? Members, we're going to drop down to number 12, House File 1122. I'm sorry, 72. Thank you. Just keep correcting me as I move along here. 1172. Representative Wolfiger.
Good morning, Chair, members. Well, all of these bills seem to have some kind of old saying. Earlier it was the early bird gets the worm here with Representative Kahn. Yesterday it seemed to be Representative Mahoney was lefty-loosey, righty-tighty. House File 1172 doesn't have anything clever like that. It is all about simplifying the current process, changing and clarifying a few definitions, and providing greater efficiencies for the Department of Revenue. With me here today is Wayne Sather with the Department of Revenue. We also have Assistant Commissioner Jack Munson in the audience. So with that, I'd like to move House File 1172, and I'm told it's to be referred to Catasas.
All right.
Okay.
Then welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Representative Sandy Wolfschlager?
No, I was referring.
That's me. No. My name's Wayne Sather. I'm a staff attorney at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Yes, sir. Please identify yourself again.
Anyway, as Representative Wolfschlager stated, there isn't really a lot controversial to this bill. There's a couple of small substantive changes. For example, Sections 1 and 2 contain amendments to the agencies to use the word referring agency to clarify that the clients may not be all state agencies. The bill was originally passed with both definitions are still in there. And Sections 2 and 4 contain changes from that refer to the Commissioner of Finance. Originally, the Commissioner of Finance was the commissioner on this bill, but that has been amended, and the Commissioner of Revenue is now the commissioner on this bill. So there are a couple of references to the Commissioner of Finance that were eliminated. Sections 3 and 4 have to do with the fees for collection, and what they do is they eliminate, there originally was a fee, a 15% basic fee, and these fees are supposed to be based on cost, and a 25% bump up fee if enforced collection was necessary. The two proposals together changed the fee to a one flat fee of 17%, and as I stated before, changed the ability to modify the fee from the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of Finance to just the Commissioner of Revenue. Moving right along, the personal liability section, there's been a few recodifications involving revenue statutes starting in 1990 and up to a couple of years ago. And originally, personal liability was spread through all the tax types. It was in different chapters. And over the years, it kind of got left behind in various places. So what item Section 5 does is clarifies that the penalty associated with the taxes in the civil penalty section 289A applies also to the personal liability applies also to the penalty as well as the taxes. Section 6 is it's substantive, but it's minor. What it does is it allows the department to transcribe liens in the direction from the Secretary of State to counties, as well as from the counties to the Secretary of State. And the reason for that is a few years ago, the law was amended to require that liens to attached personal property had to be filed at the Secretary of State and not the county of residence. And since that time, for example, if you're filing a lien at the Secretary of State on an out-of-state person or a business or whatever, and you haven't filed it at the county and you then locate real property, you want the ability to transcribe that lien to the county where you found the real property. As an aside to that, that will cost
the Secretary of State no money, the department will actually pay for certified copies, and the certified copies will then be filed in the counties, and the department will pay its usual filing and release fees.
That's the bill. Any questions, Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, you mentioned that and on line 2.4 to 2.5, you mentioned you were taking out references to the Commissioner of Finance. Is that one still supposed to stay there, or does that one need to come out also? Starting at 2.4 to 2.5.
Oh, that one is intended to stay. That reporting will still be done.
All right. And could you give us your name one more time?
Oh, it's Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E, okay. Sather, S-A-T-H-E-R.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. Any other questions, members? Seeing no other questions, I'm sorry. Representative Roth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sather, I'm looking at Section 3. I'm wondering, is this a revenue-neutral change that we're making in regards to the fee collections?
Okay. Mr. Sather?
I'm sorry. Neutral.
It's Representative Roth.
Yes, there's no fiscal impact to this bill. It's actually slightly below the actual costs collected in fiscal 2005, and it's slightly below... I should say it's slightly below the actual fees collected, and it's slightly below the actual costs in fiscal 205.
Any other questions? Seeing none, then Representative Voltrager will renew her motion that House File 1172 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to tax. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Burns, where he was here. There he is. Representative Burns, I'm going to move that House File 1294 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Burns, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, for hearing this bill. I think it's pretty straightforward. I have with me today Ken Rogers, who is a board member of the State Council on Disability, and also Joan Wilshire, who is the current executive director, also a former board member and former board chair of the council. This bill is very straightforward. It simply eliminates the sunset on the council. This is the last of the state councils to have a sunset, the other councils being the Council on Black Minnesotans, the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and the Chicano Latino Affairs Council. And I think it makes sense. I've had a chance to work with Ms. Wilshire and with Mr. Rogers in my capacity the last 4 years in helping the governor make appointments to this council. I know they're top quality individuals, and they take their job very seriously and run their agency well. So.
Would they like to testify, Kristen? Then welcome to the committee, and would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Okay. Well, good morning. My name is Joan Wilshire, and as you said, I'm the executive director of the Minnesota State Council on Disability. We'll make it brief here this morning. Just wanted to enlighten you, as Representative Burns has done. There are five state councils. We are one of them. We're one of the oldest. We were created in 1973, and as you said, we're currently out of the five, the only one left with a sunset provision in state statute. We exist as basically your advisory entity to you folks, state agencies, the governor, and the public, and our, of course, expertise is in the disability area. We have up to 21 board members. Currently, we have 21 that are appointed by the governor. They're out throughout the state, and the last year, as you can see, we're handing out our annual report and our testimony here, our joint testimony together. And we received over 10,000 contacts. This can be from phone, email, through our conferences, and et cetera. And we work on issues such as disability parking, building code review, disability housing, and training on a variety of issues. And then just recently, I would say in the last 6 months, working very closely and with the area of emergency preparedness. In fact, last summer, the governor had sent two of my staff out to D.C. to work on this issue federally with some of the national experts. So we certainly work in a lot of different areas, and we bring some expertise to areas that nobody really has in the state. So now I'd like just our board member, Ken Rogers, just to briefly talk about, from the council perspective, why it's a good idea to get rid of our sunset extension in our state statute.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Ken Rogers. I am one of the 15 appointed members of the council. We are appointed by the governor and serve for a term of 2 years. Like Joan said, we are one of the oldest councils. We've been around for 35 years, and next year we'll be celebrating our 35th year. We have come a long way in those years, and our expertise has grown as disability awareness has grown. Disability is a large area, encompasses a lot of areas. Just to give you an idea of the human side of what it means to remove our sunset, we have 5.6 staff people, that relatively a very small state agency, but we do an immense amount of work. Those 5.6 staff people every 4 years have to take time away from the schedule, their statutory mandate, and kind of fight for our survival every time each 4 year cycle comes around. So to remove the sense, that just makes sense. It gives people an opportunity to be comfortable in their work setting, be more productive, feel good about what they do, and not have this hanging over their head. I think the council's proven itself in its ability and its skills and what it represents to the legislature and to our state. And I urge that you consider the removal. Just one thing in passing, our current chair is also a blind individual like myself, and this year, for the first time, we were both able to vote privately and independently. Now, this may not seem like a very important thing for most people, but for us, it's huge. We have never been able to vote before, privately or independently. We've always had to tell somebody who we wanted them to vote for us, and then hope that they did that. And this year, because of the work, partially the work of the council, we were able to pass legislation here in the state and make that a reality. So thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. And thank you for your comments on the voting. We've taken extensive testimony and passed even more comprehensive legislation dealing with voting. So we appreciate you telling us how important it is. Thank you for that. Members, any questions? Seeing no questions, I'll renew my motion that House File 1294 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Representative Morgan, you have a motion for us?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to approve the minutes from yesterday, March 21.
Representative Morgan moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. I don't see Representative Dill here. Representative... I'm here, but we can save you for last. Welty was here now. All right. Well, if Representative Simon gets up, we're going to do three of his bills, his entire legislative agenda, and one bill. Nobody does re-election bills in this committee. You may have noticed that. It's almost the opposite.
What?
Representative Stolte. Hey, where is he? Did we get him? No? He's coming? If we can get Welty out of the way, I'd like to get him done then, so he can go back down to committee. In a very positive, proactive statement. Representative Peters, as you know, the rule is always just keep up with the foursome ahead of you.
Well, that's exactly right, and there are penalties, as you well know.
The whole course backs up.
Both stroke and fiscal can be implied. And I don't see the others that are not on the committee. Representative Dill or Eakin. They're not here either. Yeah, why don't you see if you can get the others. Yeah. Representative Bolton.
Chair, a stitch in time saves nine.
Thank you. All right. If the Office of Tech, they're here. Well, as long as Representative Morgan, I'm going to give you this. Did he just scroll in? All right. I'm going to stoop to my bill.
Representative Pulaski, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move that House File 1688 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Registry. Mr. Chair, members, this is a Department of Office of Enterprise Technology bill. It's one of their housekeeping bills, and I am going to let the department describe briefly what it is. It should be non-controversial. It simply changes in several places inner technologies to enterprise technology revolving for the department.
Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jack Reese. I'm a project manager with the Office of Enterprise Technology. And the purpose of the bill, House File 1688, basically is housekeeping, changing a couple of the terminologies, enterprise, inner technologies revolving fund to the enterprise technology revolving fund. This basically is a carryover from the old statute that was incorporated in the 1688. In addition to that, we're proposing a change in terminology and eliminating the terms voice, data, and video in the statute here. And primarily the reason for doing that is the result of convergence, and I think most of you probably are familiar with convergence, where those three are basically coming together in a single connection. As an example, your desktop computer, you've used it for accessing databases, email, etc., but now, of course, you can also use it to capture streaming video of legislative sessions. So that's just a good example of the convergence. These terms also do not totally represent really what the Office of Enterprise Technology is all about. In addition to those kinds of services, we are also involved with, let's say, email. And email, as you all know, normally is accessed by your computer, or it could be some sort of handheld device. But in the future, email can be accessed by your telephone, a voice phone. And that's called unified messaging. In addition to that, voicemail in the future can be accessed over your computer. So again, this whole technology thing, distinction between voice, data, and video, is becoming very blurred. Some other areas that the Office of Enterprise Technology is deeply involved with that really are not covered by these terms. Let's say, for an example, spam filtering, which I think hopefully all of you are familiar with too. When you get a lot of emails, that's a service that OET provides. Also in the area of security, for an example, firewall services or authentication services, those are really not covered by this existing terminology. So bottom line and in summary, our proposal is to change that terminology to information technology and telecommunications services, which we feel is more reflective of the mission of the Office of Enterprise Technology.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. I think Representative Poppy is particularly familiar with spam filtering.
Yes.
Representative Pulaski, do you have anything to add?
I have nothing to add.
Are there any questions from members?
Mr. Chair, perhaps I could help to enlighten your comments there, because I do live in Spamtown, USA, so I think he's referring to a different kind of spam than the spam that yeah. is eaten by thousands, hundreds of millions of people around the world.
Representative Poppy, any opportunity I can give you to plug your hometown is a good opportunity.
Sure, there,
Representative Flaskey.
One similarity, both last forever.
Representative Flaskey, we don't want to get into a fight. You do share at a legislative assistant. Any other comments from members? Anybody in the audience like to testify on this bill? Then Representative Plosky renews his motion to pass House File 1688. And I'm sorry, where was it going?
To the
and refer to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Representative Tinkleston, we will have you come right up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tinkleston, I'm going to move that House File 1340 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. So, Representative Tinkleston, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity this morning. I know you have a long schedule, so I'll try to be quick here. House File 1340, you should have a couple of amendments.
Representative Tinkleston, I have the A3 amendment. Would you like that moved at this time?
That would be great, Mr. Chair. Thank
Representative
you.
Tinkleston, members, I will move the A3 amendment to put the bill in order. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In action, there's another amendment coming around the A4, and that one is...
Representative Tinkleston, members, do you have the A4 amendment yet?
Yes.
Representative Tinkleston, I'm going to move the A4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Tinkleston, the bill should now be in the order that you wish.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate that. This bill relates to task forces, boards, and advisory groups. And I started working with Senator Ann Rest on this legislation last fall, looking at all the places in our statutes where there were expired groups. And working closely with Mr. Shepard over several months, found that there's probably things that need to be taken off of the state statutes. And so last fall, Senator Russ and I sent letters to all the state agencies and organizations and said, here's the list of things that we believe have expired. And if they have not, please get in touch with us. Well, we did hear from several state agencies in the interim. Meanwhile, we were working on this legislation, and after it was introduced, we found that there were several other groups that found out about the legislation. And with the amendments that I appreciate you putting on this morning, that has updated the bill so that we believe that the items left in the bill now, House File 1340, are the expired groups, which should probably be taken off of state statutes. The first couple of sections there related to some fiscal note issues that has now been removed from the bill. So at this point, it's a clean bill as far as what needs to be taken off of the statutes. I know there's a large repealer section on there, and that relates to all these expired groups. And perhaps, Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepard could make a comment regarding the repealer.
Would you like to walk us through the repealers?
Mr. Chair and members, the repealers, if you look at the bill summary that I prepared, I've on Section 14 of the bill has all, in Article 2, has all the repealers, and I've listed all the repealed groups in the bill summary. Representative Tinglestead's amendment reinstated a couple of the repealers. It reinstated the repeal of the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing, reinstated a Weed and Seed Grant Program Committee and an Ombudsman Committee on Mental Health. But all the rest of the repealed sections are listed in the bill summary.
Members, any questions? Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, as I'm looking at all these repealers, I think that we should give a list of these to all of the representatives so that we know what task forces not to put in place. It's real interesting, seed potato certification, weed and seed, bicycles, listed metals. I mean, it's an interesting lesson for us all, I think, in terms of what's actually included in these repealers.
And Representative Broad, it's another point that I alluded to a little earlier about how easily we create things, sometimes inadvertently, sometimes deliberately, always transparently. Representative Singleton, do you have anyone that needs to testify in this bill, any of the agencies? Or?
I don't believe so. I mean, you may want to open it up to the audience, but I've encouraged people to contact me if they had a question or issue about the bill, and we've taken care of any of those issues as far as I'm aware of, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify for or against the bill? Seeing no one. Members, any more questions? All right. Then I will renew my motion that House File 1340, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate it.
Representative Welke is here, and I know he has been busy. Well, the chair is here, though, too, isn't he? Dill just walked in. Representative Dill, come on down. We were searching for Representative Welty, and he's learned a lesson. If he stays in the room, he may get his bill heard a little bit faster. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We as well had problems. We had a little, technology is wonderful when it works, and we had a little problem this morning. Mr. Chair, House File 1116 is the what is commonly known as the DNR Fish and Game Bill. So if would you like to have someone move the bill, Mr. Chair?
Representative, I'm going to move that House File 1116 be recommended to pass, and I believe that has to go to Finance.
That is correct.
All right. Chair. Representative Dill.
Thank you. The bill, Mr. Chairman, has a variety of different DNR provisions in the bill that the DNR came up with, and Mr. Meyer is here to possibly explain or will explain those bills. Also, there are 18 other bills that are incorporated within the Fish and Game Bill, 10 DFL and 8 GOP bills. I can go through them and just give a brief explanation, or we can you can ask questions. And also, I have one amendment. Representative Rukavina is always good at getting an amendment in at the very last minute. So we are going to have that passed out, Mr. Chair.
Rukavina amendment?
Rukavina.
Without Rukavina.
Without Rukavina.
There's a positive and a negative to that. I didn't say Representative LD, but it's soon to be discovered which.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill, why don't we go to this amendment first, perhaps? I'm going to move the AO7-0423 amendment. I'll move it to get us before us, but before we vote on it, I think we need to know what it is, particularly considering its source.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. The 0423 amendment that you so kindly moved, Mr. Chairman, if you are an ice fisherman and you're in a shelter and you would like to fish, up in Lake of the Woods, I'll give you an example. On Lake of the Woods, you can rent a house that you can sleep in out on the lake. And if you would like to fish, eat a meal of fish while you're out on the lake, you are presently in violation of the rules. You need to be in a boat that is moored on the shoreline, or moored, or you need to be on shore to eat the fish. And so apparently there was a conservation officer that visited the fish house and found someone cooking fish. God help us in Minnesota that we cook a fish out on the ice. And gave the person a ticket because they couldn't prove that the fish was outside of the slot limit and therefore illegal fish, because they'd already discarded the remains of the fish. So this amendment probably has a little work to be done on it, but Mr. Meyer and I are going to fix it up in finance, environment finance, and that is what the bill does. Maybe Mr. Meyer would like to comment on how we got here on this.
All right, well, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning.
The bill before you today has five different provisions.
Hold on. Let's go to the amendments before us first. Let's get the amendment taken care of first. So.
The amendment as written will allow a person on those special restriction lakes to actually consume fish in an ice house. Right now, if you're on a houseboat moored to an island, say on Lake of the Woods or Rainy Lake, you're able to consume fish. If you're in the middle of the lake cooking, you would be in violation. It is an issue we need to deal with special restriction lakes and try to make sure that the language does reflect what's actually going on. Another instance similar to this that I heard of this past summer was some people were on Rainy Lake fishing. They had a shore lunch. They came off with a couple pieces of fish, I think, in a sandwich, and it wasn't one of our conservation officers, but a State Park Service employee stopped them, was going to give them a ticket for having prepared fish on a special regulations lake. He didn't. He gave them a warning. But it is an issue that has some level of vagueness to it and something that we would like to try to clarify so we can work with the amendment, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, this has good cause. The good cause, that's the reason we want to put it on in here because it's, you know...
Representative Dale, it really isn't the purview of this committee. I mean, we'll, out of deference to the author, we can put it on. I would hope that we would not have an extended debate here on ice fishing and consumption of fish. Representative Howes.
Exactly, Mr. Chairman. I know we shouldn't, but it does say rules.
All right.
Which we will look at later.
Okay. So, Representative Howes, do you want to go into the...
I'd like to have some of the wildlife they prepared, and then I'm fine with the amendment.
All right. You don't want to eat your way through the limit, or...?
No.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I'll wait until after the amendment.
All right.
I have a question regarding the...
All right. Rules. Is there any further discussion to the amendment? Representative Nelson.
I just asked, wondering if they moored the fish house to an island, would they be able to...
I was afraid we were going to go down this.
Never mind, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Meyer, you want to answer that one?
No.
All right. All those in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Broad, to the bill as amended. Now, members, with the amendment, and if you want to discuss this, but I think Mr. Shepherd did in the bill summary, list the things that were in the purview of this committee. Rather than walking through the entire bill, it might be better if Mr. Shepherd just walks us through those parts of the bill that are really in this committee. So, Mr. Shepherd, why don't you do that first, and that'll save everybody some time.
Mr. Chair, members, the reason this was a required re-referral under the House rule because of some rulemaking provisions, the ones that I've identified, and Mr. Meyer may be able to help me if I've missed one or more, but on Section 3 of the bill provides that fees for use of wildlife management areas or management lands are not subject to rulemaking. Mr. Chair, jumping to Section 33 on page 13 provides that fishing contest fees are not subject to rulemaking. And Section 44 authorizes the DNR, this is on page 16, use what's called the good cause exemption for rulemaking to amend its rules to conform to statutory changes required in the prior four sections of the bill. That the good cause exemption that is referred to in this bill in a couple of places says that when an agency is amending its rules only to incorporate specific changes that are set forth in law without, when no interpretation is required, that they can just do it. They can just amend their rules and not have to hold public hearings and things when the legislature has told them exactly what to do. And Section 47 is the similar issue. It authorizes the DNR to use the good cause exemption allowing a person having to do with taking pheasants. Section 48 provides the DNR rules regulating the crossbow deer season are exempt from rulemaking, and it does give a limited time period during which the exempt rule would stay in effect. And then the amendment that you adopted also, Mr. Chair, allowed the commissioner to use the good cause rulemaking for the purpose that Representative Dill mentioned a minute ago. those are the provisions I've found that deal with required the bill to be re-referred here.
Members, any discussion on those provisions? Representative House.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, Representative Dill. We'll start out with Section 3, establishing a fee. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Meyer or Mr. Shepard, but notwithstanding Section 16A.1283, it basically means that the Commissioner of Natural Resources, without legislative oversight, without the governor's oversight, can establish fees in wildlife management areas, aquatic management area lands, for specific purposes, but it says including dog trials, special events, etc., etc. That's giving the commissioner one heck of a lot of power, Representative Dill. Why do we need to do that?
Representative Dill.
Or Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I'll have Mr. Meyer answer that.
Mr. Meyer.
Chair, Representative Howes, what we're trying to do here is recapture our management costs for these activities once they are completed, doing restoration work, maybe providing for outhouses, things of that nature. We are not trying to overcharge or undercharge, simply recapture our costs as we are required by 16A.1285. We do do this in an open manner by, you'll see, publishing it and written in the register, but we do not try to make profit off this. These fees will be charged to make sure that the facilities can be managed and upgraded to the state they were in before the events took place.
Representative House.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with regard to this section, and then I would also go to Section 33 because it's very similar, we have a lot of fishing contests up in Walker on Leech Lake, and I'll pick the Eel Pout Festival for one. In the last 4 years, 3 years for sure with the Eel Pout Festival, except for this year because I didn't go there, Representative Peterson, Aaron Peterson was going to be there and thought it would be too crowded in Walker that weekend. But the city and the county and our local police department do most of the work. They clean up the lake. There is no, there is nothing for the Department of Natural Resources really to do after that fishing contest or before that fishing contest. Now, the only time we've seen, and no offense to Representative Dill or Mr. Meyer, but the only time we see a DNR conservation officer might be in town stopping a 16-year-old on a snowmobile that's going down the street in Walker, which is legal. But he's just checking to make sure that, you know, he's got the helmet and everything else. Mr. Chairman and members, this section would give the commissioner a lot of power. He would not have to come before the legislature. Sure, they publish it in the register, and who reads that? I mean, has anyone in this committee actually ever read that? Maybe some attorneys have, but they don't go through a rulemaking process. They don't have public input. It's a done deal. And it's the same with Section 33. They can charge a fee. They're not telling us what kind of a fee they're going to charge. And again, we're giving them more power than the legislature or the governor. And if Mr. Meyer can explain it to my satisfaction, I guess I would be okay, but I just can't imagine we would give them that much power.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Greg. Well, Representative Howes, you know, I have a few large lakes in my district as well, and we have them, but fishing contests, and I would agree with you that generally the only time we see DNR is enforcement when they're out giving people tickets for no trail permit, etc. But if you look on, I don't have it by page in line, but if you look about it in line 2.9 on page 2, it says that this establishing fees is only on state wildlife management areas or aquatic management area lands. It doesn't talk about lakes that you referenced or lakes that I would have a, like for example, Pelican Lake, which we just had a fishing contest on in Orr, wouldn't apply to that. Maybe Mr. Meyer has some more.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Mr. House, Section 3 deals with the lands that the DNR owns and administers, the wildlife management areas perhaps where dog trialing competition would want to take place. They come in there and there would be some damage to maybe some of the vegetation that we would have to come back in and reseed, or there's some road rutting from some uses on a road or something like that. What we're trying to do with this section is establish fees to cover those restoration costs or the management costs that take place. The fishing contest one is different, and that's on section 44. That's on section 33, which we can talk about after this. This piece here is allowing us just to receive the fees to restore the lands to the condition they were in before somebody held an event on the state properties.
Rev. Sunhouse.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, I respect that, but we started in January. You could have brought something through the Environment Committee and said we would like to charge a $50 permit fee for a dog trial, and we'd also like to have a clause on that permit that if they do any damage, they have to pay for it or clean it up. That, to me, would be very simple. But this gives you a lot, gives the commissioner a whole lot of authority without coming through the legislative process. You could have done the legislative process this year. We wouldn't even be talking about it in this committee.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair of the House, we did have a lot of discussion on this as it has progressed through committees. We have several other provisions in state law which has the same language for use of state forest roads and other state lands. All we're trying to do is recapture those costs and do it somewhat flexibly because every event's going to be a little bit different. Perhaps we could talk about this after committee, Mr. Representative Howes, and I can clarify a little bit more for you.
Representative Howes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm the only one. Maybe I'll be silent for a while and let somebody else talk, but waiting until after committee is almost like waiting until after the governor signs it.
Representative Howes, I believe that is the purpose of this committee to raise these questions. Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to offer a suggestion.
A suggestion. Representative Hilton, to your suggestion, which is not an amendment.
Perhaps Representative Howes could find some comfort if on line 2.8 after fees, the words for recovering the cost of providing the use of state wildlife.
Representative Hilty, I'm going to have Mr. Shepard tell us what that would do to the language if we, or to the bill if we added that language. Mr. Shepard, can you repeat what Representative Hilty has offered as a suggestion, not an amendment, and what that would do?
Mr. Chair and members, as I understand it, the concept would be that perhaps there might be a new sentence added that would say that the fees must be set in an amount that does not, that neither significantly over-recovers nor under-recovers costs.
Mr. Meyer,
you'd be fine with that. I believe that's what 16A.1285 requires us to do anyway. So,
Mr. Shepard, then I should go to Representative Hilty. Would you offer that as an amendment, that sentence?
I would, Mr. Chair. This is what I said, but it sounds good to me.
Mr. Shepard, then, would you repeat what Representative Hilty has now offered as an amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe Representative Hilty's amendment will be on page 2, line 10 after the period, insert, the fees must be set in an amount that neither significantly over-recovers nor under-recovers costs.
And Representative Dill or Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, if you look in Section 33, a very similar language on 3.16 and 3.17, that's on page 13, a very similar language is in there. We don't have any problem with the Hilty proposal. I'd accept that as a friendly amendment.
All right. We'd have to act on that. But is any discussion to the amendment, to the Hilty amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Howes, do you have further questions?
Well, I would go to then 6 and 33.
Representative Howes.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dill, the way we've done fishing contests in my area for all these years has always worked and always worked well. If with this language, and even with the language we just amended onto that other section, it doesn't give me comfort in the fact that a group that wants to do a fishing contest, how would they know what that fee might be after the contest? How can they gauge the contest and set it up in such a fashion that they make sure they've collected enough fees from the entrants that have come to the contest?
Mr. Chair, members, this section comes to us as a recommendation from our legislatively mandated budget oversight committee. Currently, the fees, which is about $108,000 a year, for fishing contest permits are being paid by the general holders of licenses throughout the state, fishing licenses, hunting licenses. There's roughly about 600 or so contests. And just a little bit of clarification, where this fee will come into play is in 97C.081. If you have a contest that is 30 or more people on open water, 150 people or more on ice, and you're charging $25 or more for the entrance fee, and prizes are worth $25,000 or more. So the person who's making the money off of that tournament, they need to come to us for a permit on the tournament, to get the permit. So what we're trying to do is capture our costs that are currently being subsidized by the people who buy hunting and fishing licenses for these people operating these permits. Sometimes they're fundraisers for nonprofits, but these people are making money off these permits. We want to capture the costs for the issuance of these permits so that it's not coming out of the Game and Fish Fund. If you have a tournament that's under 30 people on the water, under 150 people on the ice, you're charging less than $25, or the prizes are $25,000 or less. Oftentimes they give away pickup trucks and snowmobiles and things like that. The larger fishing contests that are for profit, we're trying to capture the permit costs so the Game and Fish Fund is not subsidizing those activities.
Mr. Chairman, where does it say in here how many people?
97C,
Mr. Meyer?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
The chair.
Representative House, 97C.081, Subdivision 2 describes contests without a permit in statute. We don't have the whole statute here in front of us.
And it,
Mr. Meyer,
how many was the minute? How many? Was it over 25?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative House, 30. Over 30 on water, over 150 on the ice. You'll see, Adam, Mr. Chair, 13.21 describes where those permit fees will be required. If entry fees are over 25 or total prizes are more than $25,000.
Representative House.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in Hackensack we have a fishing contest that goes all summer long. There's more than 30 kids in that contest, and they don't charge a fee. Would that apply, being more than 30 people?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, it would be, but what we're trying to do in this section here is look at those contests, and that would probably be one that would have a very small fee, if any. We're trying to put parameters on it to capture the large fishing tournaments, those costs.
Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, I would like you, before this hits Finance Committee, to make sure that anyone under 16 years old in a fishing contest is not going to get hit with a fee, or whoever runs the contest.
Mr. Meyer, there are several of us on Finance Committee, and I've already alluded to one bill that we'll be watching closely that was passed earlier that will end up in Representative Kahn's finance bill. So a couple of us will be tracking these as they hit finance. So, Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative House, we can work on some language for that, but Mr. Boggess from our Fish and Wildlife Division notified me it's under 18 right now. The whole contest is under 18. There is no fee. So we can tweak that if we need to, but I think we're covered. And I'll get that language to show the chair.
Mr. Martin, when you say under 18, you mean under 18 years of age. Not 18 is the number of participants.
Mr. Chair, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Representative House? Representative Hilty, did you have a question?
No,
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I was looking through here, and I think I recall it actually being rules and not statute, but I want to make sure that nothing in this Game and Fish Bill changes the legislation that we worked on last year in regards to the spearing ban on French Lake. We had put in place a ban that would go into effect in a delayed fashion. I just wanted to make sure nothing was interrupting that lift of that ban in 2008.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown.
Mr. Meyer.
No.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative House, do you have any other questions?
No, Mr. Chairman, only that when this bill came out of Environment Committee, I've been getting emails and calls constantly. So even though that we've tempered it a little bit, it's still something that I can't support because the people in my district, when they see this, they're going to go nuts. So that's just the way it is.
All right. Any further discussion? Anyone wish to testify on this bill?
In fact, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I would like a roll call vote because I still believe we're giving the Commissioner of Natural Resources more power than God.
Roll call has been requested.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dill.
Did we adopt the Hilty Amendment? Did you vote on that?
I'm sorry. We did. I thought we had adopted it. Yes.
We did. Okay.
We did. Any further discussion? All right. Roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll. I'm not going to go first.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Broad?
Yes.
Representative Emmer?
No.
Representative Hilton?
Aye.
Representative Howell?
No.
Representative Kahn? Representative Kalin?
Yes.
Representative Morgan?
Yes.
Representative Nelson? Representative Folsom? Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Poppy?
Yes.
Representative Simon?
Yes.
Representative Winkler?
No.
Representative Walschweiger?
Yes.
I'll vote yes. Seeing that there are 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eakin, are you here? Yes, he is. Representative Eakin. Representative Eakin, I'm going to move that House File 1418 be recommended to pass, and I believe it will go right to the General Registry.
Yeah.
Representative Eakin, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a DNR technical corrections bill. For the purposes of this committee, the focus would be on the expedited rules. It does put into place expedited permanent rulemaking provisions. It also exempts designations of waters that are infested with invasive species from rulemaking. It does clarify that a water can be designated infested if it is subject to infestation because it's directly connected to another water that is infested. These rules are expedited rules are being put into place, and the exemptions put into place because the current process has become increasingly unwieldy, especially given the increasing concerns about the invasive species that are moving into our waters. If the expedited rules can be used for designating prohibited invasive species, also regulated invasive species and others, more quickly. The rules are already allowed to be made in a temporary way, but this would allow for the rules to be done more quickly and permanently in these areas. So, and with that, have Mr. Meyer here.
Mr. Meyer, can you explain the repealer? It's a little strange.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, and actually it's one that we need to work on again because the wrong section was repealed. They changed the repealer in environment policy. What had happened, that relates to Section 6 of the bill dealing with military personnel on leave. 2 provisions passed last year in the legislature and were both signed into law. The first one that passed allows military personnel on leave to place their active papers on their dashboard and enter into the parks, and that serves the purposes of being in the parks as a permit. The second provision that passed stated that it's the language that they have here. They're eligible for a one-day permit without a fee, but you'll see on lines 3.11, the person presents their current military orders to the park personnel on duty. We do not want active military personnel placing their papers on their dashboard and going out and enjoying the parks because of personnel identity, security issues. We don't want to be responsible for that having to take place. We tried to correct this last year. We're correcting the language in statute, and then we need to repeal the proper session law that passed with that. I think they changed this to the wrong section in policy, so we're going to work on that before the bill passes off the floor.
Mr. Shepard, can that be fixed here, or should it be fixed here?
Mr. Chair, it could be fixed here, but I didn't bring the 2006 session laws with me, so I don't. If the reference is correct, is not correct, I don't know what the correct one is right offhand.
Mr. Meyer,
find that.
Mr. Chair. The correct reference would be what was in the bill as introduced. This was changed by House Research Staffing Committee due to some confusion, and I don't have the first of those bills.
Mr. Meyer, my problem is that we've already done the wrong thing twice, and it appears we may be doing it again. It would be good to get clarity on this once and for all, so we're not here next session. Yeah, we're going to hold up here for a second. If we can fix it here, let's fix it here so it moves on. If this is going to the floor, I would prefer not to fix this on the floor.
I can find the correct citation if you'd like to lay it over for 1 second, or maybe while I continue the discussion.
Let's just take a minute and we can take a little time out here for a second and get this right. Representative Peterson.
If we've got a couple of minutes, I'd like to ask a question.
Yes, Representative Peterson.
I'm just, being of the uninformed, I'm looking at page 3, line 3.23, which talks about water supply demands, and it refers to public water suppliers serving more than 1,000 people. What are those?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, that would be a city that serves over 1,000 more people. This section of the bill comes from a task force that was established in the legislature with the Met Council, DNR, and several other water authorities trying to look at consolidated water reports. What we're doing here is we're making it so that two reports that were currently presented, one under 473, one under 103G, are coming in as the same report. So it comes out of a task force, and you can see perhaps...
Where did Jim Jack go?
I don't care about. I just wanted to know what it was, just for information purposes. I think you've answered my question. Thank you,
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Eakin or Mr. Meyer. To the same quick section, are we adding more reporting requirements to our local units beyond what's already happening, vis-a-vis comprehensive plans and other infrastructure plans here?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, we're actually streamlining it and condensing it, so making it easier for the reporting and for people using this information to find it. So the answer is no, we're not putting any additional requirements. We're simplifying the requirements on them.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kalin.
Just so I'm crystal clear as our sky blue waters, these plans are currently already being conducted and written by our local units, and so they will not have to do any more work at the local level to make this section of, of new law work.
Mr. Meyer.
Chair, Representative, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have the correction?
No. All right. We'll be back.
Anything else in this bill, Representative Eakin, that we need to take a look at? I brought up the repealer because it caught my eye that we'd made a mistake. But is there anything else here that we need to have discussed?
I do not believe so, Mr.
Right.
Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 1, line 1.17. The second phrase, to select anglers or hunters or anglers for areas, can you just elucidate a little bit, Mr. Meyer, what exactly we're talking about?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what we're trying, this is actually taking our drawings for our moose permits, our bear permits, turkey permits, those processes where we update them or we use the expedited rulemaking process to do that. This section will allow those expedited rules. Currently, they're set to expire. They expire after a certain period of time. This would allow them to remain permanent. So it's such selection processes. It's where you can and can't be hunting. The things that we do to put together the hunting regulations every year, that the authorities that we have to do it, this will allow them to remain in effect rather than us to have to do them over and over and over again.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer. That's what I thought they were, but I wanted to make sure that I wasn't reading too much into. It's rather implicit language rather than explicit, but I'm content with your explanation. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Shepherd, how are we doing with the...
Mr. Chair, I just want to consult with Mr. Meyer for one moment, and then we'll have it for you. Okay, then let's go to 273, Section 2, for that.
Members, what we're doing is making sure that this is not done on the House floor.
it's difficult enough to do it here. It is really difficult to do it on the House floor. So, and the committees should do all of the cleanup as much as possible here.
Yeah.
So.
Commenting on a wide variety of things we talk about here. Plumbing, fish.
It's amazing, isn't it? What you can and can't eat on ice.
Mr. Chairman, that's
and part we've of already one. Talked about the two different types of spam, one virtual and one other.
Would you consider the title of this committee?
That's that. You barely get the title out in the morning before the committee's out. Yes, we've gone through that.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Meyer?
Members, and I'm sorry for the confusion on this. I do apologize. After consulting with Mr. Shepard, I believe the repealer is right now. The language we're repealing is the language that would allow a person to place their active military papers on a on their dash, and we do not want that to take place.
All right, so it is correct.
Yes, and I apologize.
That's okay. That's fine. I would prefer it be done here than have to spend time on the floor to it. So thank you. Thank you. Representative Eichen, anything else you want to? No.
Okay.
Then I'll renew my motion to House File 4. Yes. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. We were moving too slow. It got me a chance to read through this a little bit more carefully. Mr. Meyer, I'm looking at Section 8 of the bill, and it's talking about the water supply plan. And to me, it seems like it's a greatly expanding what our cities in the metropolitan area are required to submit, now not just to the Met Council, but to the DNR for approval. Can you tell me what the logic and the reasoning is behind having this expansion?
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to bring Jim Japs, our Assistant Division Director of Waters, who actually was a member of the task force that this recommendation came up, to answer that question.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Jim Japs, Assistant Director for the Division of Waters, DNR. What Section 8, 9, and 10 do is it relates to water supply planning in the seven-county metropolitan area. And these changes were recommended by an advisory group that was set up based on statutes established in 2005 and found under Section 473.1565. And this advisory group was set up to do a couple things. And one of them was to establish a master water supply plan for the metro area. It was also looking at streamlining and consolidating water supply requirements in the approval process. There's two sets of water supply plan requirements right now for the metropolitan area. And one is found in 103G, and the other one's found in 473. And what we're doing with this is we're moving the 473 requirement under the 103G found under the department's authority, just so that people aren't confused that there's two plans out there. There's really one plan. We've used one set of guidelines for developing these plans, and we've been coordinating that. So there's no new requirements, simply a technical change. And if you look at Section 10, we're actually eliminating more lines of statute than we're replacing in Section 8. So it's really trying to streamline that requirement.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you.
All right. Any further questions? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 1418, House File 1418 be recommended to, yes, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, I just got off the call with the advisor making sure that we were doing the right thing. And the confusion is in statute there's a footnote relating to both laws that passed. So the repealer should be Chapter 236, Article 1, Section 2.
All right, Mr. Shepard, repeat that, would you, for Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, members, the repealer should read as follows. Law 2006, Chapter 236, Article 1, Section 2, is repealed.
Mr. Shepard, you want to take a...
Mr. Chair, I do have that. That does work technically. I don't have personal knowledge as to which version the DNR would like repealed, so I think... I mean, have to accept that that's true, and it does work technically.
Members, I'm going to move that amendment, and then we will put that in the bill. So I'm moving the amendment as Mr. Shepard and Mr. Meyer have presented it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. So with that, hopefully we've clarified that particular section. Okay, thank you for doing it. Now we're back to the bill. I'll renew my motion that House File 1418, now as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Welty, I see you standing up there. We will go to you. You have returned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After the last 2 days, I feel that I'm a member of this committee now.
Representative, share your pain.
Representative Welty, I'm not going to comment on that yet. Although, if you want to trade, we could maybe work that out.
I'll keep that in mind for next year.
I'm going to move that House File 1303 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. And Representative Welty, you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. If we could take that amendment now, I would appreciate that.
All right. Members, I'm going to move the A1 amendment.
Actually, could we move the A2 and then we'll do the A1 after?
Now, the only one I have is the A1. To amend.
We have a copy of it if you need it to get copies of it.
We may have to make a copy. Does that have to... All right.
Okay.
You have it. Representative Welty, you're covered.
Thank you, Chairman Polsky.
All right. Now, I have to move the A2 first. Is that correct? And then the A1.
Let's move the A2. We'll describe the bill, and then at the end, we'll take the A1, because that's a little bit different than the bill itself.
Members, I'm going to move the 8-2 amendment, which is being passed out, and I'll let you have a look at it before we... Representative, why don't you tell us what the 8-2 does? I've moved it.
Sure. The 8-2 amendment would actually, if you look at line 1.19 of the bill, and that clause 4, what we're doing is saying that we want clause 3 to reflect clause 4. And we're just saying that unless attendance at a regular meeting location is unfeasible due to a health pandemic or emergency declaration, that the members of the public present, they don't have to be there to hear all discussion and testimony at that location if there's a health pandemic.
Any discussion to that amendment? Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Welty, so now the way it's changed, I mean, I have some concerns about this to begin with, because obviously I'm sure you do too, because the idea is to allow the public to participate. I had some comfort in knowing that at least one person would be at the location where the hearing was going to be, but now you're saying that this amendment, you wouldn't have to have anybody.
Representative Welty.
Representative Emmer, in this bill, it says that you have to make sure that the public can have access to this meeting through electronic means, or either by phone or through other electronic means. So the public has to have access to this meeting. But we're just saying, if there's a flu pandemic or other, emergency that might have been declared, then they don't have to be at that location if it's going to pose a threat to their health. So if they can call in by phone, they don't have to be at that location.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Welty, it makes sense, but the problem I'm having is that, let's take the City of Independence with 2,600 residents. What are you going to do? You're going to call all 2,600. They don't have cable. They tape their meetings, and then they replay them later. How are you going to do that?
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record. I think we're going to have the shift to testimony.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. The bill would still require the normal notification requirements under Chapter 13D, and I'd have to pull that up here, but it's under 13D04. We would still have to announce to the public that we do have a meeting through posting at the city hall or public facility, a bulletin board, other means. I think Sandy Nguyen is also here from the Newspaper Association. She can probably comment on this, but I think the newspapers were fine with this amendment, if I'm not mistaken. But there would be normal posting requirements under Chapter 13, DO4.
Representative Member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Carlson, and with all due respect to Ms. Nguyen, it's not the newspapers I'm worried about. The issue is, if you find an emergency, or there's an emergency declared where the elected officials cannot be in the same place, well, I don't know how the public is going to be able to get there and listen to a meeting that's being held by phone. And I don't see that it's workable that you can actually phone everybody in town. In a lot of these towns don't have I think you know what my question is. Mm-hmm. And the question originally when we got into this was, is that what's happening? Is that now you could literally have this meeting that's noticed to occur at the Independent City Hall on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. Emergency is declared, so now the members of the elected members do not have to be physically present. And that's the only place that some people are ever going to be able to hear what's going on. Is that what this amendment would do?
Representative Welty.
Representative Emmer, as I see it, number one, you could have a posting at that site, so if somebody did show up. For me, I've had to participate in a number of conference calls where they provide you with the phone number and then the access code. It can be as simple as putting that at that location so people show up, they see the phone number that they can call, the access code they have to punch in, they go back home, call it up, and then they're in. Otherwise, this isn't to say that the city couldn't get on the radio and say, we're having this meeting, it's going to be conducted, here's how you participate in the meeting. I mean, if this is an emergency purpose like a flu pandemic, I'm sure that they'd want to notify the public of what's going on, where the meeting's going to take place. So, I mean, there's nothing that prevents them from doing that for notification.
Okay. And I don't think I'm going to do this.
All right. Why don't we?
I appreciate that.
One last thing. Representative Emmer, I'm very willing to work with you on this. If this is an issue, we can work on it between now and the House floor.
All right. Well, let's hope we work as much of it out here as we can before the House floor.
Okay.
But the A2 amendment is still before us. Members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? A2 amendment has been adopted. Do you want to go to the A1, Representative Welty, or do you want to describe the bill?
I'll describe the bill.
All right. To the bill.
Thank you. The League of Minnesota Cities, Mr. Chair and members, the League of Minnesota Cities brought the bill forward to me. I agreed to carry it. And I really believe, you know, some people look at this and say it might be common sense. Why do we need this? But I look at it as a bill that provides a legal safeguard for those in the case of an emergency that are going to hold a meeting at a site other than the location. And I'll walk you quickly through 1303. If you look at Clause 1, the presiding officer, the chief legal counsel, or chief administrative officer must determine that an in-person meeting is not practical or prudent. Number 2, all members of the body participating in a meeting, wherever their physical location, must be able to hear one another. Number 3, all members of the public must be able to be present, and then they can do that, of course, through the electronic means. 4, at least one member of the body, chief legal counsel or chief administrative officer, must be physically present at the regular meeting location, and then we put unless unfeasible due to the health pandemic or emergency declaration. 5, all votes have to be conducted by roll call. And then if we jump down to subdivision 3, it says that the body shall allow a person to monitor the meeting electronically from a remote location, so this guarantees that the public can participate. And subdivision 4, there has to be a notice of the regular and all meeting sites. So
the bill.
This is essentially the bill.
Representative Moultrie.
Well, Chair members, this may be a tangent, but in Good Hugh County, and in fact it was on the front page of the Republican Eagle last night, we have a commissioner who's in Iraq, and he's trying to conduct his business from Iraq and used all of these conditions that are in this bill as reasons why he's able to do the job. And in fact, you know, 6 months into it, it turns out that, you know, it doesn't work. So I just want to offer that. It's probably a tangent, but it has been an absolute mess in Good Hugh County of someone being deployed and, you know, all done under the premises that electronic communication should work, and in fact, it's not working. So,
Representative Emmer.
Mr. Chair, and this is probably for Mr. Carlson, because while I appreciate what you're doing, Representative Welty, from my experience at the city level, we had emergency systems put in place where, in the event of an emergency, the mayor would make certain decisions, and the public works or public safety folks would be responsible for certain things. And that, if I remember right, and I haven't looked at it now in a couple of years, but that worked just fine for the things that needed to happen within the city during an emergency. I'm wondering why we need to do this. Why would you have to have a meeting during an emergency to do any regular city business if you, in fact, have that type of an emergency? Where is this coming from?
Mr. Carlson, you want to respond?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, going to my testimony, the reason for this bill introduction was that many of our cities, counties, and school districts have been in the process of preparing for a pandemic flu outbreak. And one of the deficiencies they noticed in the Minnesota Statutes 13D was that there was no clear authorization to conduct a meeting via an electronic means, and therefore, you know, to conduct normal business, to process permit applications or any other city business, you know, if there was a pandemic, there would not be an ability to necessarily achieve a quorum to conduct official city business. This particular language in this bill is actually modeled after language that occurs in several other places throughout Minnesota statutes. First of all, it was modeled after the section of law just before where this would be inserted, where we're allowed to conduct interactive TV hearings. I think that was done by the legislature back in, I believe, the early 80s. However, interactive TV is not generally available. It is this same statutory authority or variations thereof are available for a number of state boards and commissions to conduct business in a similar manner. But really, we don't envision this needing to be used very often. We're all crossing our fingers this never needs to be used. And we try to put in sufficient safeguards so that only under certain declared emergencies or a flu pandemic would this power be able to be used by a city council, county board, or school board.
Mr. Chair, I do appreciate what they're doing, and I just tell you, so when I vote no, you don't think I'm screaming at it. I don't see how, one, I don't think it's workable. Two, you do have emergency preparedness plans in place. Three, you're not going to be processing building permits when you have a pandemic and nobody can be out doing whatever. It just doesn't seem to make logical sense to me, and I do know that we allow it for certain boards where we've got outstate members and we don't want them to have to travel to the Capitol because they're giving their time. But I don't think this is the situation where we want to start to water down the open meeting law, because the open meeting law has some very important features to it, especially in small towns. I think it's very important that people believe in the process and don't think that things are happening outside of their sight, outside of their view. So anyway, thanks for bringing it.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Pulaski. And to Representative Emmer, I really don't see this as watering down the open meeting law, since we are trying to make sure that there are safeguards in this bill so that all people who want to be participating in this meeting or listening to it can do that. And the second thing is I would just say, you know, we haven't, thank God we haven't experienced the flu pandemic here or something similar to it, but if that does occur, you know, we've seen in other countries where essentially people aren't able to access or they aren't able to participate in their normal daily routines for a number of days, and so we could actually have an instance where maybe it's a month or 2 months where people aren't able to move around. We just don't know. And if that's the case, I would think that people would want to try to do some of their routine business or conduct a regular business for the city or for another government entity.
Mr. Shepard has found one small amendment I'm going to move. On page 1, line 1.21, delete H-E-A-T-H and insert health. Small spelling error. So I'm going to move that amendment. Hopefully there's no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. So that amendment is also adopted. Representative Welty, do you want to consider the A1, or are we... not going to consider that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, let's consider the A1 amendment.
All right, I'm going to move, members, the A1 amendment, but let's reserve voting on it until we have some discussion. The A1 amendment is moved. I represent Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Pulaski. Mary Vanek is here to testify on behalf of the A1 amendment. She brought this forward. I said that I would take it up in committee. We'll air it out, and if members agree, we would attach this to the bill. It's related to when you do close a meeting. It says that you can close a meeting to discuss medical records, and that's governed by Section 144.335. If you look up above, one of the other reasons when you can close a meeting is in Clause 3, it says for health data. So there's a little bit of a difference, and I'll let Mary describe that.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Mary Vanek. I'm the Executive Director of PERA. This issue arose as a result of a bill that we have before the Pension Commission currently. And Katie Englert from the Department of Administration brought it to my attention that the reference to medical data that currently exists in law for purposes of closing a meeting is specifically related to medical data maintained by public entities such as Hennepin County Medical Center. We often have, and on a regular basis, have appeals before our Board of Trustees from members who are applying for disability benefits who have provided to us as evidence health records from private providers. We do not have the capability in the current law to close the meetings and protect that private medical data. The language being added would now require the board to close the meeting when there is specific reference to private medical records in that appeal process.
Discussion. Any discussion to the amendment? Anyone else wish to testify to the amendment? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Representative Hilty, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Chairman Pulaski, and to the members. I would encourage you to vote for the bill. I just believe it provides the safeguards for our government entities when they're going to conduct a meeting, if it was that there was going to be a pandemic or other emergency. And I just really believe this needs to be put in place so that we do have statutes making sure or ensuring that this is a legal practice. And I really believe that this does uphold the open meeting law. And finally, I'll just let Mr. Carlson mention again the list of people who support this.
All right. Mr. Carlson. Mr. Chair, members, this bill is also supported by the Minnesota Association of Counties, the Minnesota School Boards Association, Minnesota Association of Townships, and the Minnesota Inter-County Association as well.
Any further discussion, members? All right, seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 1303, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative. And now I believe Representative Simon has a series of bills. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two of these bills, I believe, can be processed rather quickly. I will.
Why don't we go to those two first?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would then move. I would make a motion that House File 1493 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register.
All right. Representative Simon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This should be a quick one. All this does is give the Department of Administration rulemaking authority to deal with surplus property acquisition, distribution, and disposal. This is not my re-election bill, Mr. Chair. There is someone here from the Department of Administration who would like to say a few words. Hopefully only a few are needed.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kent Allen, the Director of the Materials Management Division of Administration. We need your authority to revise our rules 1255 and 1260. One of my colleagues tried to do some historical research on them the other day and found that they were written or last revised at a point in time that predates the state's record keeping. We know that they are at least as old as 1983. They're seriously out of date. They make reference to repealed statutes. They make reference to obsolete federal regulations. they contain an address that it encourages citizens to communicate with us at that no longer exists. And if somebody tried to go to that address, they would essentially find themselves standing outside the Stassen building. The rule makes no acknowledgement of our era of electronic communications. It requires us to make phone calls in certain instances, mail letters in others. So what we're asking is that you grant authority to our commissioner to go through the public rulemaking process. We expect it to be non-controversial, and we would then move our rule or revise our rule to move it into the 21st century.
Right. Members, any discussion? All right. Seeing none, then Representative Simon renews his motion that House File 1493 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would next move that House File 1555 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Registry.
All right. Representative Simon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully this one is equally as non-controversial. This bill would simply change, well, really two definitions here, having to do with energy. One just simply adds diesel fuel to a list, and the other specifies that instead of talking about state facilities, we're talking about state operations. And to flesh that out further, I'll let the testifier explain.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Tim Morris. I'm the director of the Travel Management Division in the Department of Administration.
I'm sorry, would you repeat your last name?
Morris, M-O-R-S-E.
Thank you.
What this change allows is for forward pricing to be done for the fuel used in transportation for state agencies. Presently, forward pricing, which is the practice of buying a block of fuel that you will use into the future, setting the price now and using the fuel into the future, is being done for buildings. What the change allows is for this to be used for fuel for operations, which would be vehicles, transportation fuel.
Any discussion, members? Anyone else wish to testify? All right, seeing none, Representative Simon renews his motion that House File 1555 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Stein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last but not least, I would move that House File 1494 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
All right. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one that I've been working on for a couple years, and I'm happy to say we finally have agreement by the major stakeholders here. Members, in our campaign finance laws, as you know, personal experience, everyone who runs for pretty much any office in the state whatsoever has some sort of contribution limit attached, whether it's governor or state representative or auditor or what have you, county commissioners, city council people, except there isn't one for judges. So no candidate for judicial office has any sort of contribution limit whatsoever. So theoretically, someone on the left or the right or whomever could give $1 million to a judicial candidate. I think this is of particular importance in light of the White decision, although had the White decision never happened, I would still be up here just the same, because it seems there should be some limit. And the White decision, of course, without arguing its merits, leaves open the possibility that we'll have more politicized judicial contests. But even regardless of that, and I know that is a controversial issue, this bill shouldn't be. All this bill does is impose, for the first time ever, some contribution limit. Now, Mr. Chair, I do have a verbal amendment that's the product of. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the product of the most recent negotiation since this bill has been introduced. And here's my verbal amendment, Mr. Chair. It would be to strike lines 1.20 and 1.21, renumber on line 1.22, make that parenthetical now 6, and then on line 1.22, strike the words Supreme Court Justice or Court of Appeals Judge, and insert the words Judicial Office.
Representative Simon, I'm going to let Mr. Gehring digest that for a second and then make sure that it works. So, Mr. Gehring, can you read that back to us and tell us if it works?
Mr. Chair, yes, first, I believe it works. So we'd be deleting lines 1.20 and 1.21. And then on line 1.22, delete the 7 parentheses and insert a 6 in parentheses. And then the new language would read, to a candidate for judicial office, $2,000 in an election year for the office sought, and $500 in other years.
Everyone understand the amendment? Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Representative Simon, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in case folks didn't quite track it, all this does is make the limit the same for all judges. It was somewhat unworkable, we found, to try to do a tiered approach between different types of judges. Now we're just saying all judges, it's one level. I will say, I hope I'm not embarrassing him, but when Mr. Marble, the able researcher for the House Republican Caucus, was still a civilian, he and I collaborated on this issue and had a pretty good time at it, I think. But we didn't get it done last year. But I would urge you to support. If you have any questions, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Emmer.
Representative Simon, thank you, Mr. Chair. The judicial offices, they qualify for public subsidy, too?
No. Right. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. No, they do not. And I wouldn't urge that they do.
Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, do they have to fill out the reporting requirements? Okay, I didn't know if they did.
Yes, just for the record,
Representative Simon.
Yes, they do.
Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Anyone else wish to testify? Seeing none, all those in favor, Representative Simon renews his motion that House File 1494 as amended be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Thank you. And members, thank you for all of your good work today. We've actually made it through the agenda. Tomorrow we're going to start at, what? 12. Yes, Representative Morgan has pointed out 12. It's a record for this session for this committee, 12 bills. We are going to start at 8 tomorrow, not 7:30, 8 a.m. And whoever's listening that's setting the clock, 8 a.m. so we can get it set. With that, meeting is adjourned.